Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Welcome to the Season 1 Summit
of Gays at the National Parks.
What is the Season 1 Summit, Mike?
So over the last 11 months, you and I have created this podcast, delivering episodes on 10 different national parks. The Season 1 Summit is a series of 4 smaller episodes that are going to really investigate these 10 parks from 4 different lenses. Visitorship, natural splendor, things that happened in the news, and just in general, the hiking atmosphere of those parks. So it's our way of looping back and talking about some things that we might have missed, things that we'd really like to highlight, and some other aspects of the parks that we just didn't get a chance to talk about.
And also a way to look at the parks next to one another as far as from these different lenses.
Right. It's like a high school superlative.
Exactly.
Who's the most funny? Who's the Mutt and Jeff of the crew?
Exactly.
Well, all things will be decided here.
Remind us, which 10 parks did we visit in Season 1?
In Season 1, we have talked about the following parks: Yosemite, Bryce Canyon, Great Smoky Mountains, Zion, Congaree, Arches, Canyonlands, Rocky Mountain, Cuyahoga Valley, and Acadia. And that's in order.
Yes.
Yes. So we hit a lot of the heavy hitters in Season 1.
Yes, we did.
We did. And in this episode, we're going to look at and investigate these parks from the angle or the lens of visitorship.
Of the 10 parks that we visited here in this Season 1, we did visit the most visited national park in America, and it has been the most visited for years and years and years, which is the Great Smoky Mountains National Park.
That's correct. And we actually visited the park more than one occasion.
So we
have actually physically been there more than once too.
Has it always felt like busy and like with people too when we've been there?
You know, I think the first time we went, when we did the Alum Cave Trail,
there was a lot of people.
There were
on
a
that
lot
trail.
Of people on that trail when we hiked.
It wasn't like crowded. We weren't like, you know, it's not like the subway in New York or anything.
No,
like that.
But I feel like that's one of the most crowded trails I think we've really seen. Because a lot of the times I feel like we're out on a trail and like we either don't see anybody, like the other time we went to Smoky Mountains.
Like Mount Kammerer. The only time we ran into people was on the, like when we had reached the top of Mount Kammerer, and it was some people on the Appalachian Trail
right.
who were passing through.
Right. Or like there are like, you know, very few people that you see like that dot the trail. So I do feel like in the summer, I would imagine that is when most of the parks receive most of their visitorship. And
yeah,
when
we also saw those millennials who didn't talk back to us.
That's
like
right.
On that one trail in the Great Smoky Mountains.
We did.
So
yeah, it can be very busy, but I also feel like depending on the weather, it can be very quiet too.
What other parks among the list that we visited this season felt the busiest to you?
Rocky Mountain felt really kind of crowded.
Yeah, Rocky Mountain was full of people.
We hiked out to Cub Lake. And
that had quite a few people on that trail.
That had quite a few people on it.
There were fewer people on the other trail.
Deer Mountain Trail. But I feel like we saw a ton when we were coming back. Like,
oh yeah,
a lot of people
were
hiking.
Well, we were hiking early and often.
But then again, in Great Lake, or Grand Lake, we were like the only people on the trails. We saw like a few people at the start of a trail or like on the way back, but it was like, oh, you're in the quiet winter land and like you could die out here and no one would find you in the snow until it thawed.
Right. There were some times in Yosemite it felt busy. Like it felt like there were a lot of people. Really like on the way up necessarily, but on the way back down, I felt like there were more people anytime because we were hiking early and often. Vernal Falls and Nevada Falls, there were a ton of people on the way up.
No,
I'm saying
quiet on the way down.
Coming up when we were headed down.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I meant.
When we hit the top of Vernal Falls, when we got back to the midway point, we had to do the Misty Stairs.
Oh, and then it was just like a giant, you know, group of people like laying out on a beach.
Yeah.
It felt like that.
And I also felt like Yosemite Falls was crowded. We got to that point
where it was
like we caught up with everybody. And then at the top, everybody was just like done and fully
Zion
spent.
Also felt busy, though. I'm going to say this. I feel like Zion has suddenly been discovered in the last like 3 years. And like everybody is now going to Zion.
I don't know about that. I do feel like it's maybe like a little bit more popular, but I feel like that's always been up there as a popular park.
Because of the Angel's Landing picture opportunity.
I just think it's also such an iconic and like the landscape there is like unparalleled.
I will say, if you ever find yourself single in the New York area and looking specifically at just men, then you will find in every single dating profile a photo of someone at Angel's Landing or at Machu Picchu.
That's right. And I have them both.
And you have them both. You put them both on your profile.
That's right.
That's right. I did not take a picture up at Angel's Landing because I just was like...
Terror.
I am so terrified right now.
Yeah. I also felt that Bryce Canyon kind of felt like it was a little bit more crowded.
It had some people, but I wouldn't necessarily say it was as busy as the other parks.
But Arches was. Remember, we had a line of cars trying
Arches
to get into Arches.
Was busy. Though I think that that's just because of the way traffic works in Arches, because everybody in their car literally has to go up the exact same two-lane road, and it is windy, so you have to go slow, and there's only one road through the park, and it is what it is on top of that mesa. So if you don't get there early, you're like sitting in traffic for an hour or so.
But I also felt like Devil's Garden was kind of crowded. I also felt like because Arches is mostly a driving park and you have a lot of like stops to make at those different arches, like all those parking lots were crowded. Even when we hiked out to Delicate Arch that morning, we definitely had like a lot of traffic, a lot of foot traffic on the way out. And we got out there early enough where it wasn't too big of an issue that we were able to see the arch like pretty untainted by other human beings, but it was
tainting
the arch.
Let me ask you this on the opposite end of the spectrum, which parks felt like, like visitorship was lower, like from, you know, our season one jaunts.
I mean, Congaree felt like it was also the hot dead of summer there too. Yep. We did see more people, I think, on the boardwalk than anywhere else when we were at Congaree, but it did feel like it was kind of on the quieter side.
Acadia felt also a little bit like, I mean, there were people about, but it never felt busy.
No.
It was just sort of like peaceful and like, you know.
But I also feel like, you know, we just finished talking about Acadia. All the trails are so widespread.
It is.
So it gives a lot of room for people to spread out.
Plus exactly.
Bar Harbor is right there. So there's like a lot of things that are, a lot of space for people to spread out in those realms to be able to do that. So I think one thing that we're constantly impressed with or enamored by, or at least I know that you are the visitor centers.
Oh my God,
so
you know it.
What of those 10 parks that we saw, like what visitor centers really stick out in your mind? And for you, I think, and I enjoy them too, but I think you're like very pointed about seeing them, the exhibits, like what exhibits
the best visitor centers also have an education component. And that is my, you know, just sort of, that's the part of me that is an educator that feels that way. You know, like I love being able to go into a visitor center and sort of get the lay of the land that I know somebody has curated to say, like, you know what, this is the kind of land you're in. This is who was here before. This is why this has become a national park. Like, I live for all that stuff. And I purposely try and like stay away from the internet to tell me I really want that space to inform me. So some of my favorite visitor centers, the ones that immediately come to mind for me, Great Smoky Mountains Visitor Center. Like, we've been there now twice.
Yep.
The second time was I spent most of the time in the restroom. Right. It was that unfortunate day where my stomach just kind exploded.
Yeah.
But that had such a clear sort of exhibit about the people who used to live in and, you know, mine those mountains and, like, you know, the kind of work that they did.
Yeah.
Though that I love.
Also the setting too, like, I think both times we were there in the morning, like the way that it's set into the landscape, the mountains are like surrounding it. There's like a pretty big open field, but like the hanging mist in the morning on the mountains is like such an incredible view to be able to see. I also thought like architecturally, it was just like beautifully done and like really, really nicely conceived of. It felt really good in that space. Yeah.
Yosemite also has exquisite visitor centers, like, and they have many, and, like, there are a few different things that you can see in a couple of them. I explored a few of them, but I just remember feeling a little overwhelmed. There was so much to see.
Mm-hmm.
What was one of your favorite visitor centers?
I really appreciated Cuyahoga Valley's Boston Store Visitor Center. It was kind of in like an old structure that was, I'm assuming, from the time that that part of the town was, and the locks of the canal were really operational. It did have like an interesting history about the locks. It was just cool. Like, I felt like it was a structure that had been maintained and then turned into this visitor center. And it was right kind of on the road, but near, there were other buildings that were there too. And it really did feel like steeped in history, as opposed to something that was like, hey, we constructed this because we needed a visitor center, which is great that they were able to utilize that.
I really liked the Boston Store Visitor Center too, there in Cuyahoga Valley National Park, because it felt like a visitor center area, because like there's like a little store across the street, and there was ice cream, and there was, you know, like you could sort of just like, it was, it acted like a common gathering area, and I loved that. And I just love when we repurpose these, give these buildings like new life for an educational purpose. I also feel like Congaree's educational,
I was about to say, that
like endeavor across the whole park was just unmatched. Like, I could walk through, we walked through that whole park,
and
I read every single placard every single time, and it was like, oh, I have a much greater context for what this is now.
Do you mean Cuyahoga? You said Congaree.
I meant Cuyahoga.
Okay.
That's
but
what
I do think what I said when you said Congaree, I do feel like their visitor center did a really good job too. It's like the start of the boardwalk, like right before you walk out into the park. And it did have like a really nice exhibit hall that we were right there. We were there before the Great American Eclipse. So they had a lot of things there about that as well.
They
totality
did.
Or bust. Mm-hmm. I thought that like, you know, gave them a nice leg up. I also appreciated their mosquito clock on the outside.
Yeah, that was
like
cute.
Let us know if it was like no mosquitoes or if it was a war zone. So that was like kind of like a nice little touch that I felt like was really much so appreciated. I don't really think that, like, when I think of Rocky Mountain and when I think of Acadia, I just feel like they were very similar visitor centers. I don't know, like, they were kind of like plain buildings, and I just remember it being very dark in each of those visitor centers very dark. I don't remember the education like piece to them, but I think that's probably because I was just like, yo, dude, we got to get going. Like, I, you know, a lot of the times I, as much as I appreciate an exhibit, I'm more excited to like get out there. And I really do need to, I think, as we continue to hike, like appreciate
and I like
the
to get out
more.
There with context.
Yeah, I know.
Let's talk about parking.
Yeah.
Which, let me say this. I will say hiking early and often makes parking way easier.
Unless you have to move the car. Because that sometimes can be like,
what do you mean?
Like, if you park somewhere and then have to move the car, sometimes that can be tricky.
Why
for
would
you.
We have to move the car?
If we have to go to a whole another part of the park to then hike.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I see what you're saying. So, like, if you, right.
You
if,
looked at me like I had 10 heads.
Well, like, I'm thinking, like, we park the car in the morning and we don't come back until we're done hiking, but that's not the reality
not all the time anyway.
And some places you can't hike because there's no parking,
right? And some parks like Zion and Yosemite, you have trams to do all the work for you, so that like really alleviates any sort of, you know,
parking was still a little tough in Yosemite if you didn't get there early.
Right. And in Zion, too. Remember that first day we had to park outside of
very
town.
Very hard,
But we got there when we did Angel's Landing, and we were able to park like right at the visitor center.
Exactly.
And it was super easy.
No problem.
Yeah, hiking early and hiking often is always a key thing. But I also feel like the first time we were in Great Smoky Mountains, it was really tricky to park when we were doing the Alum Cave hike.
And we were hiking early and often that day. And
yeah,
we had to park on the road in the smoke.
Yeah, in the mist. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was, that was like a little bit of a trick. But then the next time we were back in the fall, we hiked at that like spooky abandoned campground, and we were like the only car there, and there was no issue.
There was no issue. So on camera,
again, I guess it depends on season and times of year, and also how much the visitorship is. Like Rocky Mountain is, I think, one of those parks that gets a lot of visitors, and I really felt like parking could be a real struggle sometimes.
Well, I mean, there was one hike that a lot of people recommended,
right?
That is sort of like a beautiful walk, but there's only like 13 parking spots or something, and when they're gone, like there's nowhere to put your car.
Yeah,
and you have to drive like, you know, like 5 miles down the road or something.
Yeah, and then it's like there's no way to connect back. You just have to loop back. I think arches was sometimes could be problematic too, because again, a lot of those, like Devil's Garden, had a lot of parking or a decent amount of parking because that's the major trail there. But any of the roadside pull-offs for the arches, there were some that had parking that were a lot, some that had just like a pull-off you parked on the side of the road.
Yeah, and some, were side of the road parking.
I think that kind of could be like a little tricky sometimes. As far as accessibility goes, since we're sort of talking about parking, and I feel like that can kind of fit into an accessibility sort of bundle.
Sure.
How do you feel about like access for people to be able to hike? Like as far as like, you know, if you had young children or if you had someone that was like a little more like on the elderly side, like where do you feel like you,
I mean, we found, we the also have that, people who enjoy nature,
right,
who can't do inclines,
right,
who have varying levels of capability when it comes to that.
Yep.
So my favorite parks are the parks that somehow are designed in a way where you can like see the major things. But, you know, and there's like the optional hike up to the major thing,
right,
if you wanted to. The one that comes, the two that come to my mind most clearly are Yosemite,
mm-hmm,
and Zion.
Yeah.
Because Yosemite is, there are all these major landmarks all over the place that are just like breathtaking. And you can be in that space and take them in. And you can also, there are many flat hikes around that are really great. And a lot of them are paved, where you can see a lot of those things from various perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like no matter one's hiking level or ability, you can really take in Yosemite.
I also felt like Yosemite had a lot of like, points of interest, I'll say, like where it's like, oh, hey, stop here and take a photo. And it was enough that you could like, oh, wow, I can see like tunnel view, for example. You could see everything just getting out of the car and you didn't have to hike anywhere. It's like there's Bridal Veil Falls, there's El Capitan, there's Half Dome. There's all these other monuments that you can see. Even Bridal Veil Falls, I felt like, I'm pretty sure a lot of that was, there was a paved way that you could get to the falls. So that is something that, you know, it's not a difficult terrain necessarily that most people could probably head out on. Mirror Lake is another great hike because that's flat and there's a paved section there too. So I felt like, yeah, you're right. Yosemite does have a lot of like accessibility for any kind of level of fitness or hikeability for a person.
Right.
And Zion
I loved because it's like, you have all these things that you can see from the tram. Everybody is together and you can get out and look around and explore some things. There are also lots of points of interest in Zion.
I thought that from a perspective of driving and maybe stopping to take photos too. And you would be doing this yourself, but I thought that Arches and Acadia also.
Oh,
Acadia
totally.
With the park loop. And I think Arches with the fact that most of that is like, oh, you can actually see this arch from the road. You don't really have to go far. I think that was really helpful
and
too.
I'm going to also say Congaree's
Boardwalk.
Boardwalk yeah. is great. It's a beautiful walk in the woods. Sans, you know, spiders, you know, it's better without spiders. So not in the summer, but to see those trees in Congaree is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you can see all of that stuff on that boardwalk loop.
Yeah. Let's talk about our proximity to civilization. Access in that way. So which parks do you feel like were really on the edge of civilization where it would be very easy to get back to like a restaurant or to get to a place if you needed to very quickly? And which do you feel like were kind of a little further out and maybe a little bit more remote?
The ones that feel close to me are definitely Zion.
Yeah. Well, Springdale's like right
Springdale's
there.
Springdale's right there. Also, Arches and Canyonlands, because Moab is right there.
Yeah.
It's literally like 10-minute drive down the road.
Yeah.
So it's not walkable, but it is like a short drive.
Mm-hmm. Acadia also, Bar Harbor.
Oh, completely.
It's right there too.
You can be in Bar Harbor and then get on a trail and be like, you know, up in a trail and then just like go descend back into Bar Harbor.
Yeah.
I mean, that one feels good. Mm-hmm. It is a little secluded, but it's like there is lots of, you know, town there.
I felt like Bryce Canyon was like in the middle of nowhere. I feel
literally.
Like we really
no
struggled to
will
find
hear
a
you
place.
Scream.
Well, that's like an International Dark Sky Society site too, because it's so remote. But we struggled to find a place to stay, and we ended up like, I don't know, like 45 minutes away from Bryce Canyon,
which we talked
about going back to see the stars, which if you camp, I'm sure is, you know, really incredible. But we just didn't have the wherewithal at the end of that day where we hiked like 17 miles to really want to take a 45-minute drive back to the park because it literally is in the middle of nowhere.
It is. Yosemite is also pretty far away from everything. I mean, we stayed in Fresno. There are definitely tinier towns you could stay a little closer to.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a moment of, now I have to drive into Yosemite. It's going to take me a little while.
Yeah. And Rocky Mountain, I thought was actually
super close.
Really close because Estes Park was right there and so was Grand Lake.
So was Grand Lake.
And like we were in, when we stayed in Grand Lake, we were literally like 5 minutes and we were in the park, which was cool.
Here is the only bummer about Rocky Mountain National Park is that if the snow is heavy,
Trail Ridge Road
like connects those two, you know, sides of the park. Those are the two major sides of the park and they're not far from each other. Yeah. But if Trail Ridge Road is open, it's like maybe a 35-minute drive from one side to the other.
Think about Smoky. Great Smokies is the same with the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Sure.
You know, again, there's a park that's fairly close to civilization, but like if you need to get to the other side of the park via the Blue Ridge, and if the weather's
closed,
bad, forget
whoops.
It. Yeah. So
we were, it's kind of fairly close to that reservation.
Yes. Yes,
the Cherokee reservation that we drove through.
Yeah, because we had to like roundabout our way to get there. And with that, let's introduce our queen.
Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners.
Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, please welcome to the stage, Allie Kate Funds. Right. So we figured to introduce this queen in this episode because we are talking a little bit about parks by the numbers via visitorship. And we figured she would be a great queen to talk about. So who is Allie Kate Funds?
Allie Kate Funds to me looks like, you know, a Karen from Finance, which is a drag.
I think there are a lot of things
Australia,
to say.
I believe. Yeah. But yes, she does. She looks like she works in the finance department.
So pencil skirt, buttoned up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like frazzled pantsuit. Hair yeah. with the glasses, yeah. but still looks great.
Yeah. I think her song is "She Works Hard for the Money," mm-hmm. like 110%. And I feel like she is just a queen that means business. She might be a little frazzled, but she takes no prisoners. Miss Allocate Funds.
That's right. I think she has for her merchandise, it's legal pads with her face on them.
Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
Or like a, you know, like a budget log.
Okay.
That's a budget log.
Or receipt tape.
Right.
For, you know, your...
You're receding.
So Allie Kate Funds is our queen for Summit One. Mm-hmm. And she is just here to remind us to be fiscally responsible with all of our needs and wants.
Great.
So ladies and gentlemen and everyone in between, please welcome to the stage, Allie Kate Funds.
And let's end this summit with a game.
So, Dusty, I've got 5 questions for you. It's a little different from our Jeopardy-style questions. These are a little bit more pointed, but they relate to visitorship in the parks. And it really does relate mostly to the parks that we have visited this season.
Great.
So it's not going to be anything that's like super curveball-y for you.
I'm ready.
Okay. Question one. The Golden Gate National Recreation Area was the most visited spot in 2018 with close to 4 million more visitors than the most visited national park. What is the most visited national park?
The Great Smoky Mountains
that's
National
correct.
Park.
Yep. Question two. Of the 10 national parks we podcasted about this year, 5 made the top 10 most visited list in 2018. Aside from Great Smoky Mountains, name the other 4.
Oh, and so we visited these 4.
We visited 5, one of which was Great Smokies, okay, which you've already
so
answered
it was
about.
Zion.
That's correct.
Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
Arches.
No.
No. Okay, hold on. Rocky Mountain.
Yes.
And... Bryce?
Nope.
There's nowhere I knew that. Acadia.
Yeah, that's right.
There we go.
So Zion, Yosemite, Acadia, Rocky Mountain, and Great Smoky Mountains were 5 of the 10 most visited parks in 2018. And that's not necessarily in order. Those are just the parks that we happen to have visited this year. Okay. According to federalpay.org, in 2017, the National Park Service employed 17,846 people. While park rangers make up a majority of the staffing, these 2 other parks-based careers are second and third. Is it A, guide and police, B, maintenance mechanic and clerk/assistant, or C, bioscience tech/facility operations service?
I think it's C.
That's incorrect.
Oh,
it's actually
darn.
Maintenance mechanic and clerk/assistant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the second and third most paid position or most hired position in the parks. All right. Question 4. While the national parks with the most visitors are parks like Zion and Grand Canyon, Rocky Mountain and Great Smoky Mountains, the parks with the fewest visitors aren't any less resplendent. In 2017, which state had three parks with the lowest attendance?
Was it Colorado?
That's incorrect.
Hold on. I will say this again.
This is not a park. We have not been to parks in this state.
Okay. Is it Alaska?
It is Alaska.
Got it.
And that's because a lot of those Alaska national parks are super remote.
Yep.
And our final question. While this park was a state park in 1864, just 26 years later, it became the second national park in the country. Which park was it? Is it A, Yosemite, B, Mount Rainier, or C, Yellowstone?
It was the Yosemite.
That's correct. Yellowstone was the first national park in 1872, and Mount Rainier was the third in 1899. Mm-hmm. And that is our summit trivia at the end of this first episode.
This has been the Season 1 Summit Part 1 by Gaze at the National Parks.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by Dustin Ballard and Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman with Mariella Clear.
Follow us on Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks and email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com.
All original artwork featured on Instagram is by Michael Ryan.
This episode was edited by Dustin Ballard.
Stay tuned for three more Season 1 Summit episodes on the following topics:
natural splendor, in the news, and hiking trails.